Hello, everybody, and welcome to another more phenomenal episode of Voices from the Grid. I am your host this evening, Pink Ranger Brian, accompanied by Sasha,
the Eternal Red Ranger.
Yes, and I didn't want to step on your toes because you always give such just boisterous intros, so I just wanted to give you as much space as possible there. Sorry.
No, it's all good. I am the one, the only, the ever snarky Sasha Kaplan, and I already have a gripe with you, Brian, because these episodes were the farthest thing from more phenomenal.
You know what? I think we need to talk to Ben about that, because I'm not the one that chose these episodes. Either Ben or Mike. That's right. It was Mike. Sorry, Ben, if you're listening to this. Today we're going to be talking about, let's just get to it. We're going to be talking about, honestly, it's, one out of three might be okay, but these episodes are not the greatest. We're going to be talking about Scent of a Weasel, The Lore of Auric, and The Ranger Who Came in from the Gold. Har har har. These episodes, just right off the top of the bat, they do, to me, kind of feel like filler. We do get some interesting moments off the top of the head before I get into the synopsis real fast, and then we start getting to questions. Sasha, what did you think of this when you were watching these episodes?
Bored out of my freaking skull. That's what I was thinking about. I was like, hot take. I watched these episodes literally like an hour before now. I finished the last one 10 minutes ago. And I was just like, I couldn't, like, I'm at a point where, like, I feel like I'm too old for this, you know? And these are episodes that, like, they're just bad. There's no way around it. They're completely unnecessary. Well, correction. These episodes do, I'm going to click on my notes here. They do provide some information or do something that in a way, No. They give us a new toy for kids to buy, resolve a plot with Tanya, and then I don't even know what to say about the last one of the three.
Introduce a new ally, I guess.
No, the Tanya episode did that.
Yeah. I thought that you were talking about like the plot point with her parents and not Auric.
Right, so you have Scent of a Weasel introduced the stupid warrior wheel.
Which I'm looking at right now, by the way.
Boy, Lore of Auric gives Tanya her parents back and gives us a random new ally. We'll talk about that episode. And then The Ranger Who Came in from the Gold is an episode that exists.
Ballet, everybody. We're going to be talking about ballet. Oh,
bad ballet, I want to point out.
Yeah. There's a Baryshnikov joke in there somewhere.
And it's so dated. It's not even funny. Yeah.
I was like, at least I'm on this episode with the right person to talk that about, I think. Anyways, let's get into it. Scent of a Weasel. God help us all. Scent of the Weasel is the 37th episode of Power Rangers Zeo. And it shouldn't have even been called that because it's a skunk, not a weasel, but whatever.
That was weird.
A fashion show was being held at the youth center, which totally didn't look, by the way, that did not look like the youth center at all. That looked like they rented out a gay bar in Los Angeles or something. It was like, we need to shoot here. And Skull is assigned to protect the top model, but he accidentally makes things worse for her by dumping a bottle of overwhelming fragrance on her. Inspired by this, the Machine Empire creates Stenchy, a robotic skunk, not a weasel, a skunk, who makes the Power Rangers smell so bad that they won't be able to stand one another.
They can't smell it themselves.
Yeah. It's we'll get into that, I think. First and foremost, this episode begins with New York Fashion Week happening in Angel Grove, and I guess Rocky is really excited about his new gig.
Apparently doors and runways are a problem for Rocky.
the guy can do science, but he can't do runways or doors.
Even though there's like this weird, I don't know if you caught this, Brian, but in the scene where Rocky's like strutting his stuff and Tanya and Kat are cheering him on, he walks into the woman and it flashes back to Kat and Tanya after he's walked into them. And then it jump cuts to this weird moment with Rocky standing in between the two girls, and it looked really bizarre. Like, it was very clear that they filmed that scene twice and just cut different pieces of it, and they don't fit.
I kind of noticed that, but I didn't write, because like you
said, I didn't
either.
Just like,
yeah, you watched this earlier, like not even like an hour ago. I watched this like last night, and I sacrificed some sleep so I could get my notes done. And I think it might show in the qual, because like it felt like a fever dream to me when I was watching it. So I was like, all right, let's watch the episode. It was like 8 o'clock at night. And I'm like, why is there a runway? What's going on? Bulk and Skull, by the way, the heroes of our show, who are dubbed Agent Zero and Agent Double Zero. I'll give you a guess as to which one gets the double zero. Are watching this supermodel that's like just, they brought her in for this, and I'm gonna get right to it just because I think this is the most interesting part of this episode, and I wanted to talk to you about this. So like Skull is in this skunk outfit, and he causes all this bedlam for her because they have this perfume in this bottle that like goes all over her. And he tries to make it up to her, I guess, and he like talks to her. And the conversation he has with her feels like the most genuine conversation I've heard so far this season.
Yep.
Like, I was like, oh my God, this was somebody just filming an actual conversation between these two? Like, what are your thoughts on this conversation? Because it felt so genuine. I was like, where has this Skull been forever?
This Skull can't exist because we need him and Bulk to do the buffoonery. Even though, you know, to be perfectly honest, I feel like in some ways this season, Bulk and Skull have done some of the serious work, and the Rangers have been the ridiculous dweebs.
Yeah, I can't argue with you on that.
But I loved this scene. This was by far the best scene in this entire stupid episode, because Skull doesn't have that annoying, that like weird little high-pitched voice that he does. This is like a real conversation. I think you're right. This does feel like maybe they just like, they were maybe filming and they were tired and they're like, let's just do this differently. And they went with it. And it was really good. And it was like, Skull wasn't trying to flirt or anything, even though it felt a little flirty. It was just so cute and so sweet.
If there was flirting, it was happening so naturally.
Exactly.
And it was just like, oh my God, this feels right. And like, I was like, okay, this isn't Skull. This is Professor Narvi here.
Yes. Yes. That was my take as well. Very much so. You know, like, this is why this man is now an acting professor, because he can.
I mean, you know, if anybody wants to say, oh, Skull has just been this annoying character and that dude can't act, just show them the scene and just be like, no, this dude can act.
Here's the problem that I've noticed watching these episodes. The dialogue writers should probably be shot.
Yeah.
Hot take, but it's...
Or sent to Gulag, or... I don't know.
Yeah, being shot is significantly more merciful than a Gulag. But anyway, my point being that the dialogue, like, granted, dialogue in Power Rangers has always been cheesy and ridiculous and unrealistic, but this season, it feels so much worse.
I mean, not to use this as a segue, but I mean, you get a scene where Billy's tracking what they're saying is this giant comet that's going so fast that it would make, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he says it's gonna make the Grand Canyon look like a pothole if it hits Earth, and it looks like it's about to hit. He's talking with one of the Treys of Triforia. And Trey is like,
well, no, he didn't say that to Trey. He said that to Jason or Adam or somebody, because remember, Trey isn't there. He's just sending them a message that keeps getting lost in the scuffle, because apparently we cannot upgrade intergalactic communication in the center.
My point being, though, the guy who's acting as Trey of Triforia, like, compare that to that last scene, and it's just like, oh, now we're back to Power Rangers acting.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I was getting at. Because I was like, oh, my God, we had something so nice. And then he's just like, I don't know what to, he looked like a deer Lost in the Headlights, and we'll get to like how I felt about later on in the episode when like one of his other personalities came up after everything was done. That was the most frustrating part of this episode for me. But let's see here. I'm looking at my notes.
My other problem is, as you're looking through your notes, is I think my problem is that Billy doesn't feel like a real character anymore.
David Yost has checked out at this point.
And I cannot blame him. But I don't think it's all his fault. I think the writing, I think it's very clear to me that he's being sidelined and pushed out of the stories.
Yeah.
Because you can compare it to like last season and some of the earlier moments of this season where he had things to do. And he was inventing new stuff and he was upgrading Zords. And now it's sort of like, in a series where we should be getting rid of Zordon, who's also freaking, who's just ridiculously useless in all of these episodes, right? We end up getting rid of Billy, which is really unfortunate. And obviously, like I said, it's not David Yost's fault.
No. Okay, so we get all that. Billy's tracking this. Meanwhile, the Machine Empire gets this idea because of what happened on the, because, you know.
Louis Kaboom,
and Queen Mishima are watching the runway thing because, I don't know, Power Ranger monsters have this weird way of spying on everybody. And, yeah, they get this idea, hey, let's go ahead and make our monster of the week. And it's this mechanical skunk that, for no reason, at least in Power Rangers, has a French horn on its chest. And they're like, yeah, let's make everything stink. And we'll make the humans, like, how viable of a Monster of the Week plot is this to you? Like, everybody's going to stink and nobody will interact. Like, because I'm thinking to myself, like, imagine if they had released this monster in 2020. It's like, we're already inside, dude. Nobody cares about personal hygiene. I don't know. How useless is this monster to you?
Yeah, no, I honestly forgot the monster existed until you brought it up. This is just like, hold on, I do have a note here. Where was it? Skunk, where is it? Louis Kaboom and the Machine Empire are acting just like Rita and Zed and not in a good way. That is the note I have, because this is the same shtick that Rita used. This is the same shtick that Lord Zed ended up using, which is take whatever stupid thing the Rangers are doing this season in this episode and make that a monster, because somehow that is going to make a difference. And it's interesting because we do have a transition that happens in the last episode of these three, but we'll get there, that involves Louis Kaboom, and I'll talk about it then. But this whole plot is stupid. This monster is stupid. This episode is just stupid. And we haven't talked about this yet, but I have to bring it up before I forget. The fake French dude. He only has like two sets of lines, and I hate every single one of them.
He is the most annoying character in this episode.
And that's saying a lot, folks.
That is saying a lot. That's saying a lot for an episode that essentially had a Pepe Le Pew stand-in as our villain. Good Lord. So the Rangers, in their initial fight, they get hit with this blast of stench, and they're like, they suddenly can't fight because the scent is overwhelming. Did the writers forget how helmets work?
Yes, consistently.
like
this is not the first time, but yes.
Like, I get that there's like, when you're cosplaying, there's air holes in there, but these are supposed to be like highly advanced suits. You'd think that there would be an air filter on those masks.
To paraphrase Dr. K, I think in this case it is just spandex.
Sure enough. And God, that smell is hard to get out of. There's a there's a lot that happens after they go back to base, by the way. The Rangers go back to base. Billy and Alpha tell the Rangers that they stink, which then informs you that, oh, okay, Alpha has a scent sensor, I guess. What other things does he have? But that's
by the power of plot convenience.
I'm very curious if Alpha also has a taste receptor. That would be
I'm also fascinated by the fact that he can smell things. He's a robot.
Yeah. They don't have time to do anything else because the meteor's about to crash. Billy is saying, oh my God, you know, they get this warning message. Everything's about to go bad. And then it doesn't. And then the Tray of Wisdom then pipes up after everything's said and done and everybody's already crapped their pants, but you can't smell it because of the skunk stuff. And he says, since Pyramidus is out of commission, we felt that the Gold Ranger's been left at a disadvantage. Here, have this warrior wheel.
Even though we literally get Pyramidus back in like the next episode.
Which, yeah, I have things to say about that. But also, first and foremost, did they pull a Moon Knight on us like 20 years prior with these trays? Because like, he's like, freaking out that there's a meteor about to hit, but then like the next personality is like, oh yeah, no, that was me, sorry.
Well, the thing is I think the problem is that the message that Trey sent kept getting bogged down. He's like, oh, the Rangers, you're in danger, but it keeps cutting out, so it's unclear what the message is. And then the actual message actually finally renders and it's like, oh hey, feel like I left you in danger because y'all don't have Pyramidus right now. Here, have the one warrior wheel thing, because kids need new toys to buy.
I didn't get that on my first watch because I guess it's
done really stupidly. Because you know the writing in this season is just not great.
It's really not. I can't believe I'm saying this. I can't wait to get to Turbo.
yeah, that's saying a lot.
The second half of Turbo. They're told that, oh, this warrior wheel will perfectly complement the power of the Super Z Omegazord. And I was like, yeah, you know, because you can roll it like a bowling ball. How useless is this warrior wheel thing? And like, don't get me wrong. Incredibly.
I'm sure it'll be an important part of the plot and we totally won't like barely see it. Like, I think it shows up maybe one other time. Maybe.
They use it a couple times, but like, I don't know. It's useless. And again, it's useless because we're getting Pyramidus back in like the next episode, like you said. So either they waited way too long to use this warrior wheel footage from O-Ranger, or they were just like, whatever. I don't know what happened behind the scenes there, but it felt useless.
Yep.
Let's see here. A bunch of fights. I've already asked you about the warrior wheel. There's this moment during the fight when they go back out and try to fight Skunky or whatever his name is, God, I don't care. Where Jason, as the Gold Ranger, talks to Emily because she's there at the juice bar thing, and he like asks her to make a distraction. Meanwhile, Tommy's getting thrown through wrought iron chairs and stuff, and like there's this trope in Super Sentai where if you see plastic furniture, it's about to get destroyed in a fight. Thoughts on this fight, and also what are your thoughts on like Jason like talking to her during this fight? Like, does this, she doesn't know that he's the Gold Ranger. I'm stretching, but like,
yeah. So this was meant to be like, this continues the thread of Jason's a very irritating love life that we don't care about, but kudos to Jason for, I guess, having a love life that's nice, I guess, like I care, but I guess it's supposed to demonstrate that he cares about her and that she's like competent and someone he can trust, but also to keep her in danger. I don't, my only qualms about this fight, oddly enough, are the fact that the cogs don't actually hurt anybody. They're just kind of there.
I don't even think they're one of the ones that threw Tommy through a chair. They just,
like, they'll hurt the Rangers, right? I'm sorry, hopefully my audio didn't spike here as I'm moving around. No, so it's like they're just there to sort of like wave their hands in the air, like they just don't care. Haha. And you know, be obnoxious and throw stuff, but they're not actually like, they had the perfect, like, these cogs can be used to kill people, but they, like, I understand this is a kid's show, but they don't even really push that many people around. They're just sort of there to annoy people and scare them.
They're very annoying. I can tell you that. God, this episode's frustrating. One last plot point. Jason eventually gets up on stage. I mentioned this off camera. There's this moment, and there's this moment where Jason's talking to her, or he's talking to Tanya, and he's saying something about the runway show, and he's saying, oh, well, you know, that I always thought that was for girls, but he says it in like a respectful quote-unquote way, and end of the episode, after all that happens, you see him on stage wearing red again, by the way, which I thought was okay, that was kind of cool, but like he like winks at her knowingly, and it's almost like that's like the gist of the episode, was this whole thing to like push Jason closer to her.
Like I said, I don't care about Jason's love life. Although there is a nice nod here at the end of this episode. Well, there's two nice things. The first is that Skull actually helps the model get the smell off of her using tomato juice. So kudos to him for helping.
He name drops the Partridge Family too, by the way.
Yeah.
Which I thought was kind of funny. My mom used to watch
that. And the second thing is, during the talent show, Jason walks out, or no, excuse me, not talent show. Sorry, too many Ranger related activities to keep track of. During the fashion show.
Can we talk about that for just a second? They do everything. Too many activities. They do everything.
I don't even know how they exist.
They're God's perfect idiots. Homework. Yeah.
The good news is, however, that I don't know where I was going with that, but the other thing that was really nice is that when Jason walks out onto the runway, he's not wearing black.
Yeah.
He's wearing red. And I thought that was a very nice touch. But also, did you notice a distinct absence of someone in this episode?
You mean the greatest Power Ranger of all time?
The most Adam overrated? Park? You mean the most overrated Ranger of all time? Yeah, like in these three episodes, Tommy doesn't do much.
Oh yeah, Tommy. Yeah, that guy. Yeah, he doesn't. I don't think he appears out of suit in this episode at all. If not, like maybe one scene.
There's like always one scene where he's unmorphed, and then in this episode he did, because he's talking to Billy about the totally not me or whatever. But oh god, I think we've beaten this episode to death.
All right. Well, then let's go ahead and move on to our second of third episodes, The Lore of Oryk. The Lore of Oryk is the 38th episode of Power Rangers Zeo. It is the third episode of the Louis Kaboom arc. It introduces Oryk the Conqueror. We haven't really talked about Louis Kaboom either, by the way, but he's really obnoxious and I just don't care about him.
Yeah, that's it. You've said it all.
And so far, he does not warrant my time. He will in the final episode, because he does actually, no, this episode, he shows up and does more. Let's talk about the synopsis real fast. And this is all from Ranger Wiki, by the way. Thank you, Ranger Wiki, for having this available. After getting a package from Aisha containing a strange golden key and a map of Mysterio Island, the last known location of her parents, Tanya embarks on a quest to reunite with her mother and father. But Louie Kaboom has beaten her to them, leaving the Sloanes to die in the dangerous island caves after swiping their goal, the legendary Tiki of Oryk. Jason, entrusted with the key by Tanya, loses it to Louie, who uses the item to unlock Tiki, awakening the mighty Oryk the Conqueror. Louie fails to persuade the Zord-sized heroic warrior into destroying the Earth for him, so Prince Sprocket tricks the naive Oryk into believing that the Power Rangers are evil. Meanwhile, Reader, Pulse, and Lord Zedd attempt to use a giant magnet device to retrieve Louie Kaboom, while Detective Stone entrusts Bulk and Skull with his newest car after his last one got crushed under the foot of a monster. The magnet device instead hits Stone's car and yanks it back to the moon, making the villains furious and leaving Stone miserable. Initial thoughts on this particular episode. I personally think it's the best of the three. That's not really saying much, though.
Yeah, it's really not. Like, all of these episodes suck. I mean, I guess the only points to these to this episode is, one, it name drops Aisha, so good to know that she still exists. Mm-hmm. Hopefully her parents know where she is, but whatever. But then you also have, you know, the plot thread of Tanya's long lost parents, even though, like, I don't know, it was very indie. It was a little too Indiana Jones-esque for me, especially with the whip and the taking of the tiki head or whatever it's supposed to be. Like, fine. I have a question for you, because I'm very confused by this. The Oryk describes himself as a conqueror, right?
Yes.
Okay. Explain the conquering part to me.
I got nothing.
Because the character is supposed describes himself as like the fighter for what's good, the savior of the innocent, all of that, you know, lovely malarkey. And yet he's called the conqueror.
That's not what conquerors do.
Right.
A conquest is usually invading another land and taking it over for your people. And
it's, yeah, like, that's the British.
That's, yeah, well, yeah. that name should not, like, if they had gone with something like Oryk the Heroic or Oryk the, oh my God, Oryk the Brave.
Magnificent, like, Maleficent, Wanderer, whatever they would use. Just the word conqueror, yeah, just makes no sense. I wonder if that was somehow a mistranslation of his, like, the his, like, whatever he was supposed to be in the Sentai.
I don't know, and I did not care enough to check this time.
That's okay.
There is
one bit here that I did find interesting.
What's up?
So Louie Kaboom tries to convince Oryk to do his bidding, and Oryk is like, you're a bad guy. No. But then Sprocket actually has two gears working in order, and because I can't really call them brain cells, and concocts a sob story, but doesn't realize that the Rangers can just, like, have a conversation with him, and that would be null and void. So, two steps forward, one step back, Sprocket?
I guess his whole thing was, oh, well, I'll convince Oryk at this point that they're the bad guys, and he will be so mad at them, so angry, that he won't stop to listen to them. And, like, we do get shades of that because he flips Pyramidus upside down, which kind of shows, okay, this dude is pretty powerful if he can lift up Pyramidus like that. And just trying to get to the good parts of this episode, or like the parts that we can actually talk about, like, all they have to do is say Zordon, and he's just like, oh, you're the good guys. Oh, okay.
All of the good guys know the most important name of Zordon.
Oh, yeah,
Zordon. Even though he's utterly useless in this episode.
Yeah. Which... I did kind of like that whole thing where, like, they set it up where Tanya's like, hey, I got to look for my parents, yo. Can you help out? And Zordon very much, like, very silly, is like, you know, we're not allowed to do that. But these are extenuating circumstances.
Which, like, first of all, Zordon, go choke on your liquid in your tube. Because it's not like the Ranger, first of all, Rangers wouldn't make this request willy-nilly, and her parents are missing. So the fact that he is like, oh, we can't do this because this is a indulge, blah, blah, blah. And then he just does it. Like, you didn't need to. She knows what she's asking and knows it's an unusual request. Like, you don't need to be a jerk here, Zordon.
Yeah.
But then when our Auric the Conqueror shows up, and Jason goes to fight him, the other Ranger's like, we have to go. But what about Tanya? And Zordon goes, matter is too urgent to handle without her. And so they just don't do anything until Tanya shows up. And then they didn't actually need Tanya.
Yeah, they didn't do anything. And like, this is like, look, guys, you've established that you don't need that fifth Ranger in order to call the Zords and create the Megazord. So if she's really busy with trying to save, you know, her parents' life, maybe leave her and let her do her thing, right? And I have so many problems with this because Zordon is the problem. So first and foremost, they get her out of the cave. Couldn't they have just like popped her in there in the first place then? Like, could they have tracked, if they're able to do that, pinpoint that? Do you think that they could have tracked, hey, there's two heat signatures here, let's put her there and grab them out? But then on top of that, here's my big problem. She goes back onto this remote island that's out in the middle of nowhere and meets up with her parents again. They find each other after they're about to be crushed by the wall that's going the opposite direction from Temple of Doom. And she hugs them and says, I'm your daughter and all this stuff, and the credits roll, and nobody stops to think, hey, wait, we're stuck out of here remotely and she can't reveal that she's a Power Ranger. How the hell are they getting back home?
The Rangers will show up on the Megazord. I don't know. Jason will send Pyramidus to pick them up. Like, anything is possible. But what's interesting, and I didn't mention this earlier, but in the opening scene, when her parents first arrive into the Temple of Doom,
the temple from Raiders.
Basically. Yeah, whatever. They throw a rock to see if there's like a booby trap, and there's a laser. And then when Louis Kaboom shows up, so there's like this like pinkish purplish laser that destroys the rock, right? And I'm like, why does an ancient temple have something that can blast a rock like that? But then when Louis Kaboom shows up and tries to blast them, his energy is also pink. That is the same color. So it's either a really bad mistake on the part of the like people that do the special effects or what, but basically like it was really pointless for Louis to shoot
yeah
at the rock. So like, what just happened?
I don't know. And like, I mean, how hard is it to get an arrow and like have it shot on screen? Because I mean, I guess that would look too much like Raiders, I guess. I don't know. And that's just part of this episode. Another part, and it's a very small part, Bulk and Skull are charged with watching Lieutenant Stone's car. That's all they have to do, right?
Wow, I completely forgot that was part of the plot, honestly. I tuned that out.
It's like a 2-minute thing. Like, it's very, like, you know, if you sneeze, you'll miss it. And, like, Stone leaves and is like, okay, watch my not car from, I can't remember, watch my not General Lee, right? And they're just kind of, you know, dicking around doing whatever. And then, like, the car goes missing because I guess Rita misaligned the magnet to get Louis Kaboom back. What's going on here? Does any of this make any sense?
Nope.
Like, this episode reeks of filler.
Yep.
To me, it felt like they had a really interesting story with both Auric and the parents, and then they were just like, yeah, but that's not going to fill up an entire episode. We have to do something dumb with Bulk and Skull. Let's destroy another car.
Yeah, like we've been saying, these are not strong episodes, and no. I think it feels like the I don't know, the writers or whoever, they just want to get to the Sentai footage and the action, yeah, which is fine, but like, you need to freaking plot. Oh my God, this foreshadowed Megaforce. That's terrifying.
There's a simple explanation for that.
I mean, really though, but also I have a question.
What's up?
Why does Tanya give the key to Jason?
There's a simple explanation for that?
Because, I don't know. We've seen her be kind of flirty with Adam. And yeah, she trusts Kat implicitly because they're BFFs and they live together. So why is Jason the keeper of the sacred key? And also, if he's supposed to be the keeper of this key, why in the Zordon era loving world do you take it outside of the very secure command center basement bunker?
That is literally my next question. Jason is mad Louis got away with the key. Why didn't you just leave it at the command center then? Why are you at the park? You know that that's where you get attacked 100% of the time. You have a key. Oh God, it just makes no sense. Why? Like, I'm getting mad.
Don't give your give energy to this episode. It's not worth it.
Okay, let's move on. What are your thoughts on Sprocket's sob story to Oryk? I know we touched on it. It was, oh my God, I loved it, because he's like, they're so mean and they treat me like this. And he's like given this sob story, and like, it's so like adorable and like pathetic and sad.
Yep.
and
but you know, there's that moment right before this when Louis fails and leaves, and Sprocket's like, I'm gonna show him how this is done, because he doesn't get it.
Stand back, I have acting to do, you know.
Like if this season was building up to like Sprocket becoming the ultimate bad, right? Because King Mondo's gone, Machina and Sprocket are about to be schlepped away later, and then we get Gasket and Archerina. Did I mention their names? They're Gasket and Archerina. But it would have been cool if this whole thing was sort of building up to the idea of Sprocket getting upgraded and then being the final bad guy. Like, that would be cool.
That would be awesome. If they had just had that, yeah, like, that would have been awesome. But unfortunately, they're beholden to the Japanese footage here, and they didn't think to do that. But that's a great idea. They didn't think
to write good dialogue either. So, anyway.
Yeah. I think that's really all I have to say here. You know, like, we get a new ally with Oryk, and oh yeah, by the way, like we mentioned in the last episode that we reviewed, which was like 5 minutes ago, Pyramidus is back. I guess you know, Jason took it into the shop and the trays were just like, give it a day or two, we'll get you a rental. You'll be fine. And like, that's exactly what it felt like. He like took his SUV in and they gave him a compact, and it's like, yeah, we'll get your car back to you in a second, you know. And then I don't remember, well yeah, that, no, I don't remember how this episode ended, because I just talked about it. And then we're left with just kind of this weird, not cliffhanger, but it's like, how do they get home? And then
The next episode does literally no follow-up to anything that happened in the previous episode at all.
Yeah. Like, what are some of the questions that you would have, like, if they were to lead up into that? Like, what questions would you want resolved? Or, like, what would you want followed up on in this next episode?
Well, it would have been nice if there was, like, a line about how Tanya's really happy that her parents are back and she's able to move back in with them and be a normal family. Like, that would be, like, it doesn't require too much effort, just enough to let us know.
So and then, she doesn't have to live with Kat.
Right, and then maybe there's a line of, like, you know, and then Kat can say, like, yeah, isn't it great that the Power Rangers showed up to rescue you? Like, you know, it doesn't, like, we didn't need that entire action sequence. Just like this tiny line of dialogue would have been perfectly sufficient.
Yeah. But instead, alas. So let's go ahead and move on to our final episode. Thank God. The Ranger Who Came In From the Gold, which is the 39th episode of Power Rangers Zeo and is the fourth episode of Lucha Boom Arc. The synopsis, very simple here. Kat and Tanya are putting together a ballet about King Midas, but are a little short on props. So they hire Bulk and Skull to hunt them down, which leads them to finding Glooka Boom's Midas monster, who starts turning literally everything into gold, including Jason. So this is the second episode where Kat and Tanya have been organizing something in three episodes.
Because we can't give them anything that would actually like build their personalities.
Yeah. Like
for a sense of identity and independence.
I would tell them to get a hobby, but I think they have too many. Like,
yeah.
Cut down on the hobbies. Because you can only be like, Kat can only be a swimmer and a dancer and, you know, all these other things. It's like, I don't know. Where do they find the time to do this?
Maybe being a Power Ranger is like being on Adderall.
You know what? I know what it's like to be on Adderall. I don't want to be a Power Ranger.
Hey, it's the best explanation I have because nothing else makes any sense.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So okay. So my first question is, how on earth is Kat realistically going to make Adam and Jason dance in her ballet? I mean, look at the way they're dancing. This isn't gonna work. And
it'll be fine.
Yeah. This production seems doomed from the beginning. Is there actually a King Midas ballet? I'm not sure.
I hope not.
Because that would just, I don't know, like.
But at the same time, if there isn't, that means that the Rangers are the ones that, it means that Kat and Tanya essentially wrote and choreographed the entire show. Which is an insane amount of work, but also Kat's not that good of a dancer.
I mean, I'm not one to judge that kind of thing, but I'll go with you on that. The way it sounds, it almost sounds like the way that they're doing this, it feels like either a high school production or it feels almost like a pickup like football game in the backyard, because like they're just like, yeah, we're practicing and we got props and all these people, and like the context of how hard they must have worked on this thing is lost because it's a 30-minute episode. How do they, whatever.
There's a very simple explanation.
Yeah. So Louis Kaboom is decreed the new leader in this episode and sends the queen and her son to the dungeon, like you said. And then he reveals our MacGuffin for this episode, which is called the Midas Hand, a device that uses humans' own greed against them. And then Bulk and Skull happen upon this thing, which is really convenient because they've agreed to take on a challenge from Kat and Tanya where they're going to find all the props for them. But they need all these gold props. And if Bulk and Skull win, they get like double their pay. But if they lose, then it's their call what they get to do. So you get this scene of Bulk and Skull just kind of finding this thing and finding out, oh, it turns everything gold. What were your thoughts about the hijinks there? And also, how much fun did the production crew have where they were just painting everything gold?
With, like, I don't know, but if I'm the prop master, I would be pissed because, excuse me, angry, because you'd have to like either spray paint everything gold and have all of these random gold props. And I don't know, to be honest, this episode, I was just like, can this end already? Because it was extremely, extremely predictable.
Yeah, I'll make this fast then. Because there's not much that happens in this episode. Just a recap, like Bulk and Skull wind up losing and they have to be in the ballet and they just chew the scenery. Were you amused? I was not amused.
I was not amused. No.
Because, and I think Ben would say this too, like, this just shows the regression of Bulk and Skull this season, where, like, they're once again doing slapstick, where they've had all this really positive growth, and, like, now they're doing this again. Yeah.
I think part of the thing is, like, a lot of Bulk and Skull's journey, right, is going forward and then going a little bit back, going forward and going a little bit back. And this episode, we've talked about the fact that the Bulk and Skull are very largely inconsistent. The writing is all over the place in general this season, and Bulk and Skull are the victims of this bad writing.
Yes. The only other thing I can think is how, because the monster in this episode, I don't really care about. It's like, whoop-de-doo. What were your thoughts on Jason when he gets turned into gold?
Unrealistic. Like, that was my thought. Like, it's very clear that instead of, like, making like some kind of plaster mold or anything like that, they just painted Austin St. John gold and just told him to don't move.
Yeah.
And it looks really bad.
But what I thought was hilarious, and I had to comment on this, like, they changed his hair too, but, like, I guess that they couldn't get anything gold, so he looks ginger.
Yeah.
Ginger Jason. And I was like,
not even ginger. It just looks like he had those, like, not frosted tips, you know?
Like, he's like a precursor to, like, boy bands or something. It's just like, look, solid gold, baby. Yeah, something like that.
Yup.
I'm looking through my notes here. I'm not really showing anything else we really need to talk about, because this episode.
Adam had dialogue this episode.
Oh my god, that's right. Adam had dialogue. What did he say?
It wasn't important, but he had dialogue. That's all that all right. matters.
That's all that matters. This episode sucked. It really
These
sucked.
Episodes suck. The end.
Like, the Ulrich one was by far, like, the most fun one to watch. But, like, again, I was falling asleep getting these notes. I mean, where did things go wrong with Zio? Really? Like,
I wonder if part of it is that it becomes so. First, I think there's a lot going on behind the scenes, because you can tell, even in the bloopers, that David Yost is just miserable.
Yeah.
So that's number one. Number two, there is a lot that is being balanced here. Because something that we didn't talk about, and it's really not worth mentioning, but it's sort of worth mentioning, is that, like, you essentially have all of the drama happening on the moon with Louis Kaboom. That's number one. You have Rita and Zed still somehow being players in this, even though they're not. Like, they exist in these episodes, but, like, they don't do anything important.
They got a flat twice in this episode.
Yeah. And then, and they used a super powerful magnet to give them a convertible. And then finally, you have Zordon being useless, and you seemingly have, Jason David Frank absent, and I think this feels like at a point where he's kind of done.
Yeah.
And like
yeah, you can tell, like, especially with in hindsight, like, he's like, yeah, next season I'm checking out, because we've already signed on for this, but I'm definitely checking out now.
But then at the same time, why then don't you just give Adam and Rocky more to do? Because you don't need to do anything with Jason. But then at the cost of Tommy, you're also seemingly losing Adam for some reason. And, like, nobody cares about Rocky anyway, but, like, this is just a mess.
Yeah. Like,
I know we, I'm trying to think where, like, later on we are going to have some, you know, Tommy-centric episodes that you and I have already reviewed, because in case you don't know, we record these out of order.
Yeah, that's like the fifth time we've said this.
It always bears repeating, you know, like every episode or every couple episodes. Yeah. But the point is, that there are a couple of Tommy-centric episodes that we are getting, but it's just so, I just don't care. But it yeah. seems like there's a lot going on behind the scenes. And I hope one day that some great documentarian will do a documentary history of Power Rangers and we get all of the behind. Like, I know there's like different podcasts and channels that do Power Ranger stuff, but I think it would be cool to do like a documentary miniseries on the history of Power Rangers season by season.
The best way I could think to do that is there's a really good documentary about the Ninja Turtles called Turtle Mania, I think. And if you were to get something like that, I would watch the heck out of that, you know? Because I don't want something, I would not want something that very clearly has to run through like the channels of like Saban or Hasbro, where it's like,
No. This would have to be something in
like unauthorized.
Unauthorized, independent, but with yeah. someone with enough connections that they can get all of these interviews, because it would be interesting to see what yeah. was going on behind the scenes to explain some of the weird things we are seeing and get old showrunners, not just the actors, but people that worked in the production, people that worked in casting. And yeah. granted, some of them probably won't want to talk to whoever this documentarian is, because they'd have to acknowledge all the homophobia that was going on.
Yeah, that would be rough. I think that would be a great, I would, again, put that on like Netflix or HBO or something. Well, obviously not at Netflix, because that's kind of, I feel like that would stir the pot a little too much, especially considering how Netflix is like the home of Power Rangers now. But yeah, I think something like that, crap, put it on Amazon. Yeah, people would watch the crap out of that. I almost wonder, like, and I'm just kind of, like, episode's done, by the way. We're just kind of chatting here now. I almost wonder if I could talk to somebody, because I'm planning tentatively to go to Power WarfareCon this year.
I wonder just a note, in whatever you're listening, this episode is being recorded the June 7th, 2022. So yeah. by the time you're listening to this, it will already probably be after Power WarfareCon.
So, yeah, to all you in the future. But yeah, I wonder if I can't see about maybe talking to somebody about, like, because again, that's the place.
We'll cross that bridge when we get there. But I think we got to wrap this episode up.
All right, fantastic. Well, Sasha, thank you so much for being here yet again. And please tell the fine people at home, where can we find you on social media?
I am always over on Tumblr. I'm at geekgirl101.tumblr.com. That's always the best way to reach me. You can also tweet me at Geeky Kaplan. That is Kaplan with a K after the greatest superhero in the Marvel Universe, Billy Kaplan, fight me. And that's pretty much it. And then of course you can find me. I think those are the main places to find me. I have an Instagram. If you can find it, kudos. You can follow me at Geeky Kaplan. Yep. But you're not obligated to, because I don't post that much. Brian, what about you?
You can find me on TikTok at Blue Ranger B-Rai. You can also find me on Twitter at One Drink Geek, where I review the beers and craft beers and all that. And you can find this show on Twitter at VFTG_PR. All the links when we put this out will be out there. That's usually a Ben or Mike thing.
But no, legit, call us out on Twitter. If you vehemently disagree with our take on an episode, let us know on Twitter so that we can laugh at you. I mean, respond to you.
Absolutely. There you go. We are very responsive on Twitter. So if you need to talk to us or want to talk to us, hit us up there. We all have access to it. And I think that's about it. So I'll go ahead and start wrapping this up. So until next time, and I'm not going to do Ben's thing, but to all the guys, gals, and non-binary pals that listened, thank you so much for listening to yet another more phenomenal episode. So be sure to grab your Zeonizers and Zeo Crystals.
And may the power protect you.
May the
power. God, let it end.
Oh, God.